Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 34, Teaching the Saints, Part 6. We spoke in the last lecture about working with the temperaments using saint stories, and I gave you some possibilities, and I put that with a capital P, of working with some of the martyrs. These stories would definitely have a salubrious effect on the melancholic children in your class, but might be too strong for others. So you know your children better than I do and will have to use your judgment. The other temperaments come more easily, and I would suggest as a wonderful possibility the story of Saint Kevin for the phlegmatic children. And here is a story that almost verges on being a fable and is just as short as a fable, because it simply describes how this wonderful saintly being, Kevin, put his hand outside of his window one day, and a bird, a blackbird, alighted on it. And as Kevin watched, the bird began to build its nest. And Kevin realized that his hand was going to be staying out there and serving like the branch of a tree. Now, if you've ever been to Ireland or at least seen photographs of it, you know that actually there are large swaths of Ireland which are treeless, in part because of the depredations of the British, who cut down all kinds of trees to build their navy. But there just are also parts of Ireland that geographically probably once were filled with trees and now are, you know, ancient swamps turned to peat. So it's very possible that such a thing could have occurred. The bird could not find a suitable tree limb, and Kevin stays with it until its little ones are born and until they're old enough to fly away. And phlegmatics will love the story. It's short enough to memorize. You may have for the first time ever a phlegmatic standing up and telling the whole story joyfully. And it's such a lovely story and so deeply ingrained in the Irish that one of the great Irish poets of the 20th century, Seamus Heaney, wrote a poem about it and read this poem, recorded it, and I'm going to play you the under 2 minute recording of the poem. So this is not going to be my voice. It's the voice of the Nobel Prize winning Irish poet Seamus Heaney.
St. Kevin and the Blackbird. And then there was St. Kevin and the Blackbird. The saint is kneeling, arm stretched out, inside his cell. But the cell is narrow, so one turned up palm is out the window, stiff as a crossbeam, when a blackbird lands and lays in it and settles down to nest. Kevin feels the warm eggs, the small breast, the tucked neat head and claws, and finding himself linked into the network of eternal life, is moved to pity. Now he must hold his hand like a branch out in the sun and rain for weeks, until the young are hatched and fledged and flown. And since the whole thing's imagined anyhow, imagine being Kevin. Which is he? Self-forgetful, or in agony all the time, from the neck on out down through his hurting forearms? Are his fingers sleeping? Does he still feel his knees? Or has the shut-eyed blank of under-earth crept up through him? Is there distance in his head? Alone and mirrored clear in love's deep river, to labour and not to seek reward, he prays. A prayer his body makes entirely, for he has forgotten self, forgotten bird, and on the river bank, forgotten the river's name.
Now, if you listen carefully to that poem, it's in two parts. It actually is two separate stanzas. The first of them is indeed more phlegmatic. The second one, because after all, this is an Irish poet, becomes more melancholic, and we hear about the sufferings, and it's sort of more modern, you know, in a way. This is what we as modern people would think about, you know, essentially, well, how did he use the bathroom, and didn't he ever get hungry, and how could you hold your arm out for so long? So Haney sort of brings this in also very poetically and very sweetly. I'm not saying either part of this poem is necessarily appropriate for the children, but simply to show you, you know, one can take any one of these saint stories, because they are so many variants. It's not like you have to religiously stick to every word that you read. And you can also form it and direct it towards one or another child or group of children in the class. And I want to mention something else that very often, of course, our great concern is whatever poetry we're teaching the children is being taught so that they themselves can recite it. And we only want the children, and rightfully so, to be reciting poetry that is age appropriate. So that means that although certainly we can draw upon Shakespeare and Shelley and Keats and a whole host of very great poets for poetry that is appropriate for children, nonetheless, it's not until 7th and 8th grade when we're getting into creative writing or looking at a short story writing or poetry writing course for the children that we're really getting into great poetry, you know, really great literary poetry. And for years, this is how I worked. But I have observed a teacher, a wonderful, gifted teacher in the Cincinnati Waldorf School, who, being given the newly published copy of David Kennedy's book, The Waldorf Book of Animal Poetry, decided that for his fourth grade class, every day he would just read a poem from that book, because of course fourth grade is when you study human and animal or zoology. He would read poems to them, even though many of these poems were over their head. Certainly nothing that the children could not hear, but nonetheless, nothing that they were ready to recite or live with on a regular basis, but just so that they could hear great poetry about a subject in which they were really interested. And I thought, my gosh, you know, what a no-brainer. Of course that's what we should be doing. In the same sense as I suggest to you, have great art up on the wall, even though it may not have much to do with the curriculum. You're going to have a lot of other art on the wall that's completely curriculum-related. But just to give especially today's child something or a lot of a cultural background that they're not going to receive anywhere else. So if you look at particularly the other David Kennedy anthology, The Waldorf Book of Poetry, there you're going to find incredible poems for children, and which nonetheless, many of them are also wonderful poems for adults as well, including things about the saints. And even if you can't recite these, no reason that you can't read them to the children. Even if they hear it once or maybe every week, you have one poem that you read for 4 or 5 days and then go on to another. And just do that from now through 8th grade, in addition to all of the other things that they are learning. Well, with that thought in mind, let's go on to The Sanguine. And usually one wouldn't think of, you know, stereotypically that saints, who we sort of think of as paradigms of virtue and very, very good, how in the world they could in any way be connected to the sanguine, mischievous, romantic, superficial, and so on temperament. But actually, you will find, if not necessarily in their character, some of these saints had a whole number of adventures and, move from one place to another, and that alone can be delightful for the sanguine. So I would suggest one of quite a few, Saint Brendan, because Brendan is the voyager saint. Brendan and his fellow monks get in their little coracle and leave Ireland for the great unknown world. And it is very clear from these descriptions that they probably, went to Iceland, very likely Greenland, and very likely even, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, the sort of outer banks of North America, that they touched base there, that they came pretty close to the Earth's magnetic pole, because at one point all of the nails in the boat begin to fly out. And it's just wonderful. It's a ceaseless variety of adventures, some of them, if not laugh out loud, that will sort of bring smiles to the children, others very poignant, as when they meet Judas, who's off on an island. So this is a sort of adventure that takes them from the physical world, probably a little bit into the borders of that physical world that were still very close to the earth at that time, particularly in the northern climes. And it's something that sanguines will really enjoy, just talking about the great variety of experiences that they had. And there are other saints, Saint Bridget as well, who has experiences in different time periods, which are also sort of very interesting. And then for the choleric, and this is what's amazing. As you read the saint stories, the Irish saints particularly tend to embody this, but other saints as well, you will be astonished at how many of these saints are very choleric in nature. And that, as I've said, the choleric is the etheric body that has a very hard time penetrating the physical. It tends to remain outside in the nimbus of warmth, which gives the choleric that very fiery quality. Which, along with the strong melancholic quality, is often seen as really, an embodiment of the Irish people. So here we can think that, an etheric body of the Christ being is trying to find its way into the physical and cannot penetrate very far, and suddenly a person who might have been known as sanguine or phlegmatic or melancholic suddenly manifests these very powerful choleric forces. In fact, what happens, as we know from the fairy tales, as we'll see again, particularly in the Norse myths, is that one might say there was a whole type of person who was seen to be very, very much under the influence of the etheric body and the etheric world, particularly the growth forces inherent in the etheric world. And this was the giant who, because the etheric forces were so strong, was kind of sleepy and not altogether very smart, a kind of phlegmatic quality appeared to be there, but also tremendously strong and easily roused to anger. So I want to go into a little bit more detail to tell you a story which not only is a wonderful saint story, not only is a wonderful story for cholerics, but in certain ways is almost, it's like the archetype of what the choleric is really about. And this is the story of Saint Christopher, who, by the way, has, I think, essentially been decanonized by the Catholic Church because they could not find sufficient evidence that he ever really lived. So here we have another one of these figures, like Aesop in a certain way, you know, because Christopher's one of the earliest saints. So you go back far enough, and who knows if that person really lived. And we can think, you know, as recently as a figure like William Shakespeare, there are a lot of very intelligent people who don't believe Shakespeare not only didn't write his plays, but maybe didn't really even exist either. That it's not possible for one man to have written all of those masterpieces. You know, Francis Bacon had to be involved, maybe King James, and who knows who else. Rudolf Steiner has also said that his great teacher, Goethe, who, because he wrote so prolifically in the fields of poetry and the novel and the short story and the sciences and politics and on and on and on, one of the most prolific writers who ever lived, that in the future his identity, though highly documented, would be doubted as well, and it would be felt that there was a collaboration there. So it's not a surprise that little by little, most of the classical saints will gradually disappear from the canon of Catholicism and be replaced by more modern people who are sort of more politically correct than many of these saints are. But let's hear about Saint Christopher, because I think that this story not only will help the choleric child, but also gives us deep insights into the nature of this temperament. So we will hear about Saint Christopher in our next lecture.